The House Capital Investment Committee will come to order. Members of, in your packets is a memorandum or a letter or a something, communication from Paul Mandel. And I would like you to read that, and we'll discuss that at a later time. But it fits in with the field trip that we had on Monday. The first item on the agenda today is a welcome to Pelican Rapids and Representative Nornes. Please begin.
Good morning, Chair Murphy. Pelican Rapids is in Otterfield County and one of our beautiful cities that enjoys a lot of tourism in the summertime. And so I would like to, because of a shortage of time, I won't go any in detail on the bill, but I have Amy King here from Pelican Rapids who will represent the committee that's been working very hard on this project.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate the opportunity to come and present to you this morning. As Representative Norton says, my name is Amy King. I'm here representing the City of Pelican Rapids and the Pelican Rapids Pool Committee. I am here to seek funding to bring a state-of-the-art, family-friendly, multicultural aquatic facility to Pelican Rapids in the larger regional area. To give you some background, Pelican Rapids is a rural west central Minnesota community, and we're very unique for our ethnic, cultural, and religious diversity that we have in our community. We have over 14 languages spoken, and over 55% of our population is represented by non-European backgrounds. 22% of our community lives below the poverty line, which is much higher than the national average of 14%. Our pool committee has been working towards this new multicultural aquatic facility that would serve Pelican Rapids in a larger regional area. The facility will promote health and wellness, youth and family, and tourism recreation for our city and the surrounding areas. Our current pool that we have was built in 1978, and it has reached a point of structural deterioration that is no longer reparable. In 2012, we did a study that actually recommended closing the facility, but we've been able to make repairs to keep it open each season since. Last summer, to give you a perspective, we had days where it leaked up to 8,000 gallons of water a day. Currently, they left about two-thirds of the water in the pool last fall, and it is all drained out. So we're left with a problem this spring of determining how to open it for this season. We're not sure if it actually will. The Pelican Rapids Pool serves as a recreational hub of activity in our summer months. If you come see, in 2018 alone, we had 2,500 patrons, which actually equates to the population of our rural community at the pool. Our city campground also sits adjacent and is regularly full, and the pool is one of only two outdoor water facilities in all of Ottertail County, public pool facilities, so there's a wide regional draw that comes to use our facility. Our new facility will be a multicultural facility, serving people of all races, ethnicities, and physical modalities. Recreational facilities are proven to promote interaction and exchange and work toward making diverse communities more livable and inclusive for all families. And they allow interaction among our cultural groups to start young as they jump into the pool and grow into adolescence and adulthood. So it's so common at our pool in the summer to see many varying nationalities. It's so fun to see. And we want to create and continue that safe space for interactions to foster and grow. So Pelican Rapids is so eager to continue building an inclusive, welcoming community, and this pool is a safe opportunity for us to do that. I am really proud to say we've already raised $1.73 million of our $3.7 million budget, and we have another $500,000 pledged in matching funds that we're working towards. The $1.8 million that we are seeking here from the state bonding funds would allow this pool to be constructed as early as 2021, which is our goal. Facilities such as this multicultural aquatic facility have the potential to help cities like Pelican Rapids thrive and help in that rural rejuvenation process. You, as our elected officials, have the opportunity to help fund a portion of this project and have a significant and direct impact on our youth and families, health and wellness, and regional tourism and recreation. So I would ask, do you have any questions I can answer, and will you partner with us to make this facility possible? Any questions that I can answer for the committee?
Thank you, Ms. King. Yes. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say to Representative Nordness, I appreciate the honest, hardworking advocacy you do for your community.
Ms. King,
yes.
Do you charge fees at this pool?
We do. It's a very nominal fee. We did regional research. Currently, our fees are $3 a day for kids to come enjoy. We also have a pass that can get you a membership, and it's, I want to say, $50 to $60. They're way below all of the other regional area pools, and we do that on purpose, given that we have such diversity in our community, so that it is accessible to anyone.
Are the fees... did the fees pay for the previous...
The operating expenses.
Operating expenses and fixing up the pool year by year kind of stuff?
They have not. Fees brought into the pool have paid for a portion of those reconstruction that is needed, but the city has had to put some dollars in. To give you an example, the current operating budget is approximately $50,000 of our current pool, and revenue sat about $28,000. So the city understands that there is a commitment to further funding that. As with any aquatic facility, as you look at different operating budgets, and all of this has run through our city council, they've actually committed over $1 million to the project from the city as well, and are very excited to move this forward for our community.
Thank you very much. Representative Narnes renews his motion for House File 2933 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
Thank
all
you for
in
your
favor
time.
Signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much, Ms. King.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Narnes. Thank you. Thank you. Representative Drazkowski, I will move that House File 3017 be considered for possible inclusion. Please begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'd like to thank you and Ms. Nash for your help in offering to have this hearing today. With me is Brad Drankon, who is a mayor of Zumbrota. Zumbrota has a road that used to be a state road that was turned back, and it was not brought up to city standards. So, Madam Chair, I'll turn over to Chair Drankon.
Madam Chair, members, thank you so much for your time this morning. Zumbrota's busiest and most important city street is Jefferson Drive. It was built in 1934 as an original section of US 52. When the highway was expanded in 64, 52 was made into four lanes and moved about a quarter of a mile to the west where it sits today. This section of old 52 or Jefferson Drive, it was about 2 miles, is the project that we're here to talk to you about. Our estimates by our engineers for rebuilding this road are $6 million. It's far beyond the city's capability financially to tackle. So we're here today to ask for help. We're looking at a 50-50 cost share, $3 million from the state, $3 million from the city, which we would most likely have to bond for. As you know, cities our size, under 5,000 people, aren't eligible for federal infrastructure money. You might ask if this project is fair. In other instances where roads have been turned back, the state has either given them to an entity that can afford to pay for them, like a county, or they've rebuilt them and given them to cities to take care of. Neither of those happened. You might ask if this project is regional. Our fire department, our ambulance, our branch of the Mayo Clinic, and the main route to Zumbrota Mazeppa Public Schools are all accessed by Jefferson Drive. Every fire truck that answers a call in Zumbrota or the neighboring town and townships, every ambulance that answers a call in the area of Goodyear, Belchester, Mazeppa, Pine Island, Wanamingo, or Zumbrota, every school bus that takes a kid to school in the morning to Zumbrota Mazeppa Public Schools and takes a home at night, drives on Jefferson Drive. You might ask if this project is needed. Well, in your packets, there's a very short presentation, including drone footage of this road for you to take a look at and to see that despite the best efforts of the city to maintain this road, it's in need of rebuilding. And you might ask if this project has support. We're grateful to have the unanimous support of the Goodyear County Commissioners, the support of our state legislators, Senator Mike Goggin and Representative Drazkowski, who we thank for giving us the opportunity to be here today. But we also are grateful for you and your commitment to Minnesota's small towns, because without your help, projects this size are overwhelming to towns of our size. So thank you, and I will answer any questions you might have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm sure this is a very valuable project. You know, we certainly need to take a good look at areas that you have difficulty in paying for projects. That's the purpose of this committee, and particularly looking at a Drazkowski bonding project. I'm just we kind of keep a total. And we're wondering, Representative Drazkowski, do you have a lot more bonded projects coming forward that we need to anticipate?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Erdahl. This is my only one this year, Representative Erdahl. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Drazkowski. Well, we'll certainly give this due consideration I just hope this isn't the start of a trend for you.
I only bring the best projects, Representative Erdahl, and this one is in great need.
Should be noted that Representative Erdahl is the lead minority member on this committee, and he is razzing his favorite representative from Zambroda. Thank you very much. Any other questions? If not, we will. And I thank you for recognizing that we do care about the small towns in Minnesota.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, members.
The third item on the agenda is House File 2838, Grassy Point, Representative Olson, and your presenters is Frank Letterly, who is the Rail and Freight Planning Director for MnDOT. Is that correct?
That is correct. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. My name is Frank Letterly. I am the supervisor of the Rail and Freight Planning Section of the Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations for MnDOT, and we are presenting today on the Grassy Point Bridge. The Grassy Point Bridge is a 1,645-foot railroad bridge that crosses St. Louis Bay between Superior, Wisconsin, and Duluth, Minnesota. The bridge was built in 1912. The middle span of the bridge opens to allow ships to pass through the harbor to the south. And this is the only freight rail connection between Minnesota and Wisconsin in the vicinity of the harbor. The bridge is an important freight facility with frequent use by freight trains crossing between Minnesota and Wisconsin, and is used by every major railroad in the region, including the BNSF, Canadian National, and Union Pacific. At over 100 years old, the bridge requires a combination of restorative and preventive maintenance that would bring the bridge back to a state of good repair. Increasing operating speeds on the bridge and ensuring reliable operation would be an overall benefit to freight operations in the Twin Ports. The bridge is not just a static structure, it's in fact a large machine. The opening of the center span is powered by electrical motors that first lift the center span off its supports and then rotate the span 90 degrees to create openings for large ships. The rehab work would consist of updating the electrical and mechanical devices that lift the span off its supports before opening, updating the center pivot, bearing, and gearing that allow the bridge span to rotate, and updating the various devices that ensure that the bridge comes to rest in the proper position when closing. The operators' houses and equipment houses that house the controls and machinery would also be renovated or replaced. These upgrades would be entirely within the mechanical portions of the bridge. There would be no impact on the steel truss bridge itself. Last August, key components of this of the mechanical systems that allow the center span to rotate failed. The bridge was stuck open for almost 3 weeks, requiring freight trains that normally would cross St. Louis Bay to be diverted to other routes. The congestion and delays that resulted from this diversion had a significant deleterious effect on the proper functioning of the freight railroad network in the Duluth Superior area. Major components of the bridge operating mechanism needed to be manufactured because there are no readily available replacement parts for a 100-year-old bridge. The failure of one key component last August, installed over 100 years ago, foreshadows further failures that are likely to occur in the near term. The condition of the Grassy Point Bridge was studied as part of the Northern Lights Express Preliminary Engineering, Environmental Review, and Service Development Plan because Northern Lights Express passenger train service would cross St. Louis Bay between Minnesota and Wisconsin over the Grassy Point Bridge. The reason I bring this up is because the improvements associated with this funding request have already been subjected to environmental review, with the Federal Railroad Administration issuing a finding of no significant impact in February of 2018, meaning that we can move forward with this project immediately because we don't have to go through the environmental review process. But while the rehabilitation of the bridge would support the reliable operation of passenger rail service and was considered an important element of the NLX project, it has become evident that rehabilitating the bridge is critical to increase the efficiency and safety of the bridge and ensure the continuing functioning of the freight railroad system in the region. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I missed the motions on the bill. We have an oral amendment that we need to make to the bill to get it in the order we need.
I move that House File 2888 is before the committee and that we would like an oral amendment. Would you like to state it?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So in one line 1.6 and 1.12, the appropriation should actually be $8.75 million.
$8.75 million. Yeah. That's a better number than we have.
I assume you like amendments like that in this committee. Yeah.
We approve of those. It's House File 2838. I move the oral amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted for $8.75 million. Change. Okay. Mr. Jones, do you have a statement to make on behalf of the Amtrak?
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Good morning, everyone. Just that I'm here just to reconfirm that Amtrak very much supports the NLX project in its entirety, and that we are willing to commit dollars to implementing this project should the state decide to advance projects like this to bring about NLX.
Thank you very much. Representative Considine.
Just move the bill as amended.
The bill will be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I understand correctly? I thought in following your descriptions, the repairs are going to be done on the swing elements and the ability of the bridge to swing as opposed to any structural weight-bearing or load-bearing portions.
That's
Mr.
correct.
Lederle.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair?
Yes.
Yes, that is correct. The actual bridge, as you see it, would not change. It would be kind of the inside mechanical mm-hmm. portions of the bridge.
And Mr. Lederle, you mentioned how that will, you said, raise the efficiency, but now it's my understanding the train can only go 5 miles or less an hour. So what would that do to a train speed in the future?
A portion of the mechanical systems is the way in which the bridge closes and can reconnects back to the rails in either direction. And so what some of the components that are involved would ensure that those connections are much more precise and would therefore allow trains to operate through the bridge at a higher speed.
But not a particular amount?
We think we would get it up to 30 miles per hour.
Thank you very much. If not, the bill will be held over as amended for the possible inclusion. Thank you very much. House File 2888. Representative Gunther, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my privilege to be here again.
And it's our privilege to have you here.
Damn right.
Please begin.
Okay. 20 years ago, Representative Henry Callis and I introduced a bill for the Lake Crystal Rec Center. They raised a lot of money themselves. I remember attending many ice cream socials and everything else. And introduce the bill and tell you what they really want, Ryan Yonkers is here from Lake Crystal, and he can tell you what they need.
Dr. Yonkers, welcome.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. I thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. I've served as the executive director of the Lake Crystal Area Rec Center for the past 8 years. 25 years ago, this group of people came together with a plan to create a community and recreation center to serve South Central Minnesota, to be located in the city of Lake Crystal. Between individual and business donors, as was said, many millions of dollars were raised, and the state saw fit to contribute $1.5 million to complete the funding to make sure this project happened. Together, we built the facility with an amazing swimming pool where we hold swimming lessons for toddlers to adults, water aerobics for seniors, many family-friendly events. Our gym, walking track, fitness center are accessible 24/7 to members, and our multipurpose gym holds events year-round, which attract people from Fairmont to St. Peter, from New Ulm to Owatonna. Staying true to our mission to serve all, we offer membership scholarships so that anyone may access the rec center regardless of ability to pay. From our fully accessible pool, to wheelchair basketball, to free lunch and learn events for seniors, to free family events, we balance our fiscal responsibilities with our mission to serve. Finally, we partner with all three of our local healthcare providers to provide wellness and nutrition education, to provide on-site physical therapy. We partner with our community, community education and local schools to share gym space, to share programming, and we aggressively pursue grants which have made a significant financial impact. The city of Lake Crystal contributes over $200,000 a year annually to operations, and Blue Earth County contributes another $30,000. We have successfully operated and maintained this facility for 20 years, but now there are a number of large, expensive capital projects which just must be addressed. They are mainly the main HVAC unit for the pool, which is inefficient, been repaired repeatedly, uses a now obsolete kind of coolant. Our roof project, which has been also patched repeatedly after 20 years, is shrinking and cracking, and our pool deck needs to be resurfaced. Our request is for $375,000. We estimate the whole project to cost about $550,000. The city has already committed $200,000 towards this project, so we do have local funds. But the cost of these improvements represents a heavy financial burden all at once to the city of Lake Crystal. I would argue that the state made a wise investment into a regional resource 20 years ago that has paid back in measurable and immeasurable dividends of health and wellness and quality of life. Although this is one of the smallest asks you will hear before you, I will tell you that I think it will make one of the greatest impacts, and it does for the people of this region. and I ask for your support. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as someone who might have a similar project to this, and I'm curious as to what, when you built this in 2000 and the state contributed $1.5 million, what was the total cost then?
So, Madam Chair?
Mr. Youngers.
It was approximately $5 million. So nowadays probably $20, $25
million. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to commend Representative Gunther for his early commitment to this project and for continuing to represent Lake Crystal so well.
Thank you. Even though it's not in my district?
Oh, really?
Representative Sandstedt.
Madam Chair, who represents Lake Crystal?
I think Representative Munson does.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you say the city was contributing $200,000 to the project?
Madam Chair?
Dr. Youngers.
Correct. They have allocated up to $200,000.
Thank you.
Anything else? Representative Considine.
Thank you. I'll make it very quick. I have also attended multicultural events in this facility in the past to play Santa Claus for an Asian American kid.
It's a secret.
I don't think they're here. They might be watching for television.
Madam Chair?
Dr. Youngers.
I will say, especially since that group came earlier with a similar proposal, that we have been approached by Fairmont, Byron, a number of other communities have visited us many times to ask us how we did this, how we operate it, and as a model for other cities to do the same, that with a little help from the state up front and in the local areas able to sustain it, it has served as a model for other places.
Representative Gunther, would you object if when we're considering this, if we change the line 1.11 on your bill? Because of the $200,000 offer that we've received.
Is that, I don't have a copy of the bill here.
It says that it does not require a non-state match. And
yes, I would not object to that. I know they have anticipated contributing to the project, and they have not asked for the full amount. They've asked for
$375,000. Yes. All right. With that, Representative Considine.
Do we need an oral amendment?
No, we don't. Not at this time, because we're going to hold it over for possible inclusion. Which leads me up to, since you're mostly all here at this particular moment, in your minds, next week we're going to start the process of, rather than expanding the number of projects under consideration, we are going to start thinking about and talking about discussing condensing the number of projects. And that's going to be we're going to build on that in the days to come. And so you should be in your own minds and making lists of various categories of for sures, not so much. And the process that we used last year to appoint. And so start thinking about that. I'm giving you a fair warning, so you won't be shocked. But we cannot continue adding more and more things to the agenda. We're going to have to start narrowing it down. And isn't it wonderful that you were here for Lake Crystal today because we didn't start narrowing down yet.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. I appreciate your consideration of this project.
Thank you for coming, Dr. Yonkers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
The next bill that we are going to consider is House File 2989. Representative Sundin and Sheriff Kelly Lake, welcome to the committee. Representative Sundin, we are going to hear your discussion about what the bill is, and we're going to hold it over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2989 is going to bring parity to the services that Carlton County can provide for female incarcerated personnel, and it meshes well with some other plans that the county has. And I hope we get into a few of the details there and convince this committee about the value of what can be done in Carlton County.
Ms. Lake.
Madam Chair, thank you, and good morning, members of the committee, Madam Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to present. So our seeking funding for this is for a regional female offender program as part of a component of our Carlton County Jail. So as sheriff, public safety is obviously paramount to what I do. It's my top priority. And a large part of that is our jail facility and the programming components within it, because ultimately we want our offenders who come into our jail, we know they're going to be returning to our communities, and we want them to return better than when they came out, and we don't want them coming back. So part of the regional female offender program came about because we've been studying our jail for about the past 5 years. Our jail is over 40 years old right now, and we knew that it is ending its near end of life. And we actually just recently received a sunset letter from the Minnesota Department of Corrections that after July 31st, 2023, we can no longer use our current jail facility. So we've been planning for that. Part of that came in the fact that the female offender population has grown exponentially in our county and region-wide after we've been looking at. In fact, over the last 12 years, our female offender population has doubled. There is a Minnesota state statute that requires parity in male and female offender programming. That does not currently exist in our county or region-wide, in fact, statewide. So there are many programs for male offenders, but we know that for female offenders, there's some specific programming for that gender that should be met, and it isn't. So that is a gap that we want to be able to provide in our facility. We have currently Carlton County is part of a 5-county area community corrections, and that is the Arrowhead Regional Corrections. And we do have a female offender program that is available to us, but that is only 10 beds, and that is more of a step-down program. It is not a secure facility like a jail would be. We would work in conjunction with that program. It is a step in what we would be able to provide. In our female offender program, we would look at some big picture areas. The ask for this is for planning and design for this program. But we know that there are some female-specific needs in program creation, such as trauma-based interventions, domestic violence, mental health, chemical dependency, all very important areas we want to focus on, physical health, life skills, education, including parenting education. What we want to focus on is a continuum of care. We want to look at the female offenders from the time that they come in our door, the time that they're arrested, through incarceration, and actually making that connection out into our community and connecting them with community services once they are released as well. We have gotten a lot of support for this concept, for this program, to include our Arrowhead Regional Corrections Executive Director. and the board. We have also been in talks with our Fond du Lac band and tribal chair. He is also very supportive of this concept. Our current jail makeup of our inmates is approximately 30% Native American. So that is another very important component that we want to consider and that we do consider in planning for this and designing this. We also have, I have spoken with Department of Corrections Commissioner Schnell, who is here with us today, in support of this program concept, because there has been obviously recognized gap and a need for this service for the female offender program. We also have support of our 6th Judicial District Chief Judge and also St. Louis County, who is the largest county in our Arrowhead Regional Corrections, again, has noticed the, and recognized the gap and the need for this female offender program. So we are really hoping that this funding would allow us to be able to do some comprehensive planning and design work around this so that we can provide that programming, which is much needed for these offenders.
Thank you very much, Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and this sounds like a really, really important project for the region. And I'm curious, has you guys know how many beds you're looking at trying to design for? Is that part of the pre-design process, or are you sort of on track? Obviously, the facility you have currently is inadequate, and you're trying to make do through other facilities. But if you could just talk a little bit about what that is. And one other additional question. Can you talk about the sort of the makeup of what type of offenses generally of the women that would be, you know, using the facilities?
Sheriff Lake.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yes, so we, in our design, all the planning that we've been doing the last 5 years, we have identified an approximately 84-bed facility for our current jail that we would need. And within that, we were looking at a 24 to 30-bed female-specific program regionally. Again, part of our design would be to really get down in the details of exactly what that would look like, how many, and what programming would be within that. But that's the thoughts on that. In our conversations with St. Louis County, again, who is our largest county in our community corrections area, they indicated at any given time they have approximately 9 females that are sentenced in their current facility. However, having said that, the chief judge in the 6th district also indicated that there could be more than that that would be sentenced to a facility if there was programming available specific. There is not that option. There's local jail with not a lot of programming contained with it, or prison. There is not a lot of options in between for females offenders in around the state, certainly not in the whole northern half of Minnesota. So that is an area that we're trying to, a gap that we've identified that really we believe needs to be captured and what we're looking at. So again, this money would help us design, you know, more the specific needs around that.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just that follow up, what is the type of offenses generally that these women find themselves with?
Sheriff Lake.
Madam Chair, thank you. So in our comprehensive look at our local population of female offenders, which we believe is going to be pretty consistent throughout the region, we had pretty much top 5 offenses of why we see females. A lot of it is going to be drug-related, probation violations. So they've been sentenced already. They're out in the community, and they do not abide by their conditions of release, so then they're brought in and arrested on a probation violation pursuant to that. Theft is another one, and domestic violence is another one, and then just some traffic, DWI, traffic-related things like that. But those are going to be the top ones, probation violation, drugs, theft.
Thank you, ma'am.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really interested in this project because I'm working very closely with Itasca County on construction of a new correctional facility or, mm-hmm. or jail. We don't know exactly the size of that project yet, but my question is twofold. You talked about St. Louis County. Is there any, have you working at all with Itasca County? How big is this region?
So right now we have been focusing on just our ARC, our Arrowhead Regional Corrections, five county area. Mm-hmm. But certainly if we had, you know, beds available in the space that we have, once that's identified, if there was room for that, we would be certainly open to, you know, other areas. We have discussed that absolutely.
And a second, maybe different question is, you're looking for bonding money. There's no match for the design portion of this. I don't know if you can think this far ahead, but I'm sure you have. Where would you be coming back for bonding money to actually build the facility? And if so, where would you get the match? How do you see this coming together?
Sheriff Lake.
Madam Chair, thank you. So we have actually, we're designing an entire jail. This female offender program would be a component of that jail. And we have actually gone, also we're requesting to be able to put a local option sales tax on a referendum to be able to pay for, or have the voters have a choice on how they want to pay for the facility. So that right now would be the plan for the overall facility.
Just follow up to that.
Representative Lehman.
So the idea would be Carlton County would bond for the project and then pay for the debt out of a local sales tax option. Okay. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Sundin, did Carlton County apply before January 31st
That bill is in the works.
Thank you. Commissioner? You have a brief comment to make, and I understand it has something to do with your comment that you made before when we were talking about when one state agency regulates a county or what happens. Welcome back to the committee, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm here today simply to talk about the fact that this project came in after the governor's review, and therefore it's not in the governor's package. However, it falls within the framework of some of the administration priorities of trying to address issues of women, children, and families. We think that there are some unique opportunities here. There is nothing in the state like this, and I think there is an opportunity for regionalization and looking at possibilities of how a facility like this can actually be part of the continuum of how we manage folks who are coming into the system. We think there's some real opportunity here. So I just wanted to give voice to that, and I'm grateful for the county, and we would pledge to work with them and their partners on determining and working through the scope of the project.
Very good, thank you. I'd also like to acknowledge that Commissioner Brenner is here too, and I know he's been on the Arrowhead Regional Corrections Advisory Committee, or the board that makes the decisions for the regional corrections, and I'm sure he was interested in what might be an expansion of the corrections at some point in time. But I certainly wouldn't address that today on a bonding project. 40 years of relationship. Welcome, Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This has been, on my mind for a long, long time, a facility up here for females. We've been very, very lacking. And ARC actually, at one time, which I'm sure Mary's been well aware of, that we have also talked about this type of programming, and we will probably
since the 90s.
Partner with ARC Area Regional Corrections for the actual programming that would be in the jail for female offenders.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Sheriff. So one thing that struck me from your testimony is that you said that 30% of your population is Native American. Can you give me an idea of, for the ARC, what is the population of the Native Americans for that area?
Sheriff, for the entire region, not the jail incarcerated population, but the general population.
Madam Chair, the general population.
I would not be able to give you specifics, and I would hate to guess on that.
But it would be five counties.
I believe in Carlton County, it's 4 to 5%. But I would have to get that information specifically for you, and certainly could do that.
So, Madam Chair, I'm asking this because it seems like, you know, for a population of 4 or 5%, when we have 30% that are Native American, that's concerning for me. And I would like to ask you, what are some specific programmings to address some of the root causes that, you know, were identified in Representative Dean's questions that you were talking about, the folks who are coming into your care, and what will this, you know, with this funding particularly do to help address some of those root causes of?
Sheriff Lake.
Madam Chair, thank you. That is a very good question, and we have a very good working relationship with the Fond du Lac tribe. In fact, we have reentry programs currently that are in existence that we work very closely with their Public Health and Human Services Division, their Law Enforcement Division, in looking at what we can do to serve the Native American population in our facility. They actually come into our jail and provide some of our programming already currently, and we hope to expand upon that. In fact, in speaking with Chairman Dupuy, we have discussed looking at, through this design process of our facility, having space incorporating Fond du Lac staff right within our facility, so that we're, you know, making sure that we are providing culturally appropriate programming and what is, you know, directed to the needs of the Native American population, not only while they're there, but also, again, that continuity of care, that continuum of care out into the community is very important to us.
Thank you very much. We will hold this bill, House File 2989. Over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and a special thanks to the testifiers and the team that came down from Carlton County.
Yes.
It's a group effort. Thank you.
And it's only because you traveled so far that we allowed more than one speaker.
We could drive around the block to get more time.
That's all right. That's all right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Madam
thanks
Chair.
Thanks so much members for coming.
Thank you.
I was at the grand opening of the new jail 40 years ago, or 42 years ago, because that was my district at the time. So I suspect I'll be at the next grand opening, too, if indeed it is included. House File 2970. Representative Richardson, Commissioner Atkins, I observed earlier, former Representative Atkins, that you use this as a social hour and meeting old friends or former friends or reacquainting yourself.
It's nice to be home, Madam Chair.
Thank you for coming. And I just have Joe Atkins' name on my agenda. And Commissioner, or who else? I have Representative Richardson. Who else?
Madam Chair, we have the Mayor of Invergrove Heights, George Torville, joining us today as well.
Okay. Welcome. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2970 is seeking $5 million for the Veterans Memorial Greenway Project in Dakota County. Dakota County is home to more than 23,000 veterans, and this project would create a 5-mile paved route that would be the longest greenway in Minnesota dedicated to honor the service of our veterans. In addition to the memorial for our vets, parents, students, teachers, and administrators in the districts are also champions of this project because it will also serve to increase safety in our community. Currently, there's not a safe and accessible route to connect popular parks and natural areas across busy Highway 52 and also Pine Bend Elementary School. Today, I have former state rep and Dakota County Commissioner Joe Atkins to speak briefly about the project.
Commissioner Atkins.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. It's nice to see some old friends. It's even better to see some staff folks that I had an opportunity to work with, and specifically to wish Ms. Nash her 30th anniversary here. Congratulations, and thank you for your service. A year ago, you may remember, we testified about pedestrian safety here in the committee, and I appreciate that opportunity. We had just suffered a fatality on a county road just prior to that. Since that time, we've suffered another. A 13-year-old boy crossing a county road on November 1st lost his life. And so when I somewhat take offense when people refer to this simply as a bike trail. This is a focus of Dakota County. We've seen a 35% increase in fatalities, not just here, but across the country. And so we're laser focused on trying to improve pedestrian safety. I appreciate the bonding committee coming out and taking a look at our projects. This one, it literally is the crow flies. You're 1 mile between an elementary school and our most popular park and a new nature center. Can you get there safely? Not at all. You'd have to cross over busy Highway 52 to get from our most popular Mississippi River Greenway that you helped with, 200,000 users a year, to our most popular park at Lebanon Hills, 900,000 users a year. You have to cross two train tracks, two highways, and two state highways and two county highways. 54,000 trips at grade in conflict with cars, trucks, trains. You're putting bicyclists and pedestrians in direct conflict with train traffic, truck traffic, and vehicle traffic. This is about pedestrian safety. We also, and I'm going to have Mayor Turville speak to the veterans piece, we are the, and this surprises people, we're the second 23,000 veterans in Dakota County. We're the home to the second most number of veterans anywhere in Minnesota, and we have no veterans memorial honors for our veterans. This would also suffice in addressing that. So for pedestrian safety for veterans, we'd appreciate your support for this important project. The match is more than half. We've already made an investment of our own, and we're seeking funding for the other half as well. With that, I'll turn it to Mayor Turville.
Good morning, and thank you for hearing us. I'm here on behalf of the city of Invergrove Heights, and a large portion of this east-west corridor is in the city of Invergrove. It also, in taking a look at Joseta County Park that is farther to the west, it also will entail Rich Valley Park in the city of Invergrove Heights, which is home to soccer, lacrosse, softball, and baseball. And we're taking a look at the major component of this is safety. And when the idea came up that we could name it in honor of veterans and being a veteran myself, I thought, what a great idea, right? And so we are, we're taking a look, our full support for the city working with the county, and hopefully we can get some additional support and make this happen. So thank you very much. And we'll continue or answer questions that may be as we go along the process, but we consider it a major, again, number one is safety to this for pedestrians and for bicyclists, and also in taking a look at connectivity for now and for the future.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it's customary to attain or to refer to someone by the highest office that they have attained. And so if it's all the same to you, I'll refer to you as Commissioner Atkins.
I'd go with representative as long as we're sitting here.
Not specific to this project, but this is your opportunity to talk to the Capital Investment Committee. Could you give us your thoughts on bonding in general as it relates to Dakota County and Dakota County's role with the entire population of the state and the projects that you have in your area.
Madam Chair. Representative Juergens, Madam Chair, and members. Dakota County represents 8% of the state's population, more than 8% of the state's revenues. Our requests, bonding-wise, are considerably less than that. The total Dakota County ask is about $30 million with all of our requests that have been submitted thus far. Even together with all of our local communities, still well beneath. If you have a $1.5 billion bonding bill, for example, 8% of that would be $120 million. We're not even approaching that, Madam Chair. So we're trying to be as frugal as we can, but would appreciate your support.
We're on House File 2970. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
This bill will be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
Representative Detmer, it's your turn. Three words. House File 3189, Representative Detmer, you have a short amendment.
Short and sweet, Madam Chair. And again, yeah, you're right, just three words. We're actually amending laws 2017, first special session, Chapter 8, Article 1, Section 15, Subdivision 3. And again, if most of you have traveled from the Twin Cities up to our great North Country, you've passed Forest Lake. And it's a great place to stop on your way north, and but the interstate highway that going right past Forest Lake, we put in a new bridge on 97 and the interstate. And I'd like to introduce Mayor Priner is here. Jesse Priner is here from Columbus, the city of Columbus, and the county engineer, Joe McPherson. I'd like to have him just share some history of this project and how it's going. It's almost finished up. They have some work to do on the lights and also some other road work there. But this project, we started on working on this in 2015, and it passed in 2017. So we'd like to turn it over to County Engineer.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm happy to be here. I appreciate the opportunity to present this information to you today and just give you a summary of where we're at. So as Representative Detmer had mentioned, this is a project that's actually goes back about a decade here. The partnership between the city, the county, and the state to get this project to unfold. It's your, as he mentioned, it's the first interchange north of where 35E and 35W come together. So it's that first interchange. If you've been through there recently, the Diverging Diamond Interchange, which is one of very few in the state, is almost fully constructed. We're almost there, so we're excited about that. What I wanted to do today is just kind of explain the background of where that $9 million came from, where that figure was, how we got there. As the representative mentioned, this was a process that started in 2015, and in 2017, we were successful at obtaining $9 million in LRIP funds to make the necessary local roadway improvements. And what that is when we started in 2015, we had a request amount of almost $25 million. But in the span of those 2 to 3 years, we trimmed the fat. We looked at what is the necessary improvements that we need to do to make sure that when MnDOT comes through and they construct the new interchange and do the 35 overlay, that we have our roadways in the correct position and construction to get that project done. So we looked at that. We narrowed it down to the CASA 54, which is West Freeway Drive, CASA 23, which is Lake Drive. Those are on the west side of the interchange. And then Hornsby Street, we realigned that to match up with the south section, which is south of Trunk Highway 97. So the $9 million funds was to construct those three sections. Those were a high priority to get that other interchange done. So during the project, as it unfolded between 2017 and today, we experienced some efficiencies with delivering those projects. The County Road 54 and 23 projects came in under bid. And in addition, when we completed the plans for the County Road 54 project, we were actually able to mitigate some of the proposed wetland impacts We cut our wetland impacts in half, and then we also tweaked the alignment a little bit to help minimize and mitigate some of the business impacts that would have unfolded with the original design. So that was a benefit. We also leveraged local dollars to help pay for part of that interchange. The county put forward $4.2 million to help pay for the diverging diamond interchange over 35 on 97. So throughout the project, there's been a leverage of local funds. So based on the savings that we received from good bids during the 2017-2018 construction seasons and some other efficiencies that were experienced in the design of the projects, there's going to be a remaining balance of those $9 million in LRIP funds of approximately $1.2 to $1.4 million. And so this request before you today is there's one section of that intersection that wasn't constructed through this original bill. And what that is we saw that as it wasn't the extreme high priority that we needed to get the interchange done, but it's still an important leg to that interchange, and we need to get it done and tie it into the County Road 2354 intersection. But we needed that $9 million to get everything out of the way and prep for the 97 interchange. So I open it up to any questions you may have. That's a lot of information.
So what are you asking for, Ms. McPherson?
Sure. So what we're asking for is that remaining balance, as I mentioned, about $1.2 to $1.4 million that remains from that original bill, that $9 million, we'd like to use that funds to help leverage that to complete that last leg, the West Freeway Drive, which is on the west side of the interchange north of County Road 23 or Lake Drive.
You're asking for the $1.2 to $1.4 million that the state should be receiving back for this West Drive thing.
That's correct, Madam Chair. So that $1.2 million, when we originally did the final ask for $9 million, we focused on the highest priority to get that interchange done, and that was County Road 54, County Road 23, and the Hornsby Street realignment. And so we still had a high need for that West Freeway Drive, which is that local section of West Freeway Drive. However, we focused on what the main priority was to deliver that 97 project.
Representative Erdahl, did you hear about West Drive before?
I'm sure I must have, but I don't remember.
The Department of...
Madam Chair, perhaps. Representative Detmer, could you tell me about West Freeway Drive?
If you take a I think most of you have gone to Duluth, Madam Chair.
Representative
Erdahl, if most of you have gone to Duluth, you know that big project that's been going on in the Forest Lake area. It's the resurfacing of the freeway there, the split bridge, the bridge going to Highway 8, and then that Highway 97 bridge. And what we're looking at, I carried the bill in 2017. It's not in my district, but most of the traffic comes from Washington County. And the part that we want to finish, if you talk to the public safety people in both the Columbus, Anoka County, and Washington County and Forest Lake, that's a big part of this project. And we didn't think that the $9 million would have done that, but now that there's money left over, we want to use it to finish the project so it's done. I know the school district, a lot of buses come across the freeway there. That stretch of road is important, that it can serve the city of Columbus to get things done the right way.
But Representative Detmer, yesterday when I came through Columbus on my way back here from the caucuses, I saw this big empty eagle's nest in a tree. But beside that big empty eagle's nest, what I assume to be an empty one, but Representative Lilly tells me that should be eggs in there at this time of the year. There were two eagles just kind of hanging out by the nest. And I don't know if they were courting or what they were doing, but they didn't seem to be doing very much, but they sure were elegant sitting up there in that tree by the eagle's nest. And so everything must be happy in that area.
Madam
now
Chair,
that the road construction is all done.
Madam Chair, I saw those same eagles. I remember one eagle said the other eagle, when are they going to finish this project?
Oh, do you think that's what they were talking about?
I think so.
They didn't look like very much was coming out of their mouth at the time. They kind of looked kind of drowsy even. I'll have to think about that. But is the Department of Corrections or not the Department of Transportation, are they in on this $1.2 million to $1.4 million West Drive?
So, Madam Chair.
Appropriation?
Madam Chair, yes. They're supportive of this. We're not asking for any additional money through the bill.
Right.
It's just
it's
using
just
that remaining
the leftover
balance.
Money you want to keep rather than return it and let some other little community and two other birds. I would like to see something in writing from Department of Transportation that supports this river, West River, West Drive.
West Freeway.
West Drive. And that will complete it then, huh?
I just checked, Madam Chair, just checking to see if there's somebody here from MnDOT.
I think someone's going to come and.
There we go.
We're going to hear about it. Mayor, will you let her sit there, please? Thank you.
Ms. Witt. Morning, committee members. My name is Jennifer Witt. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, and as Mr. McPherson said, we are supportive. We're fine with this.
You think that's the best use of that $1.2 to $1.4 million left
over? It is
over.
Important to Anoka County, so, we're okay.
And the district engineer thinks that's okay, too?
Actually, yes. The district engineer, Representative Murphy, is fine with it, so yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. We will hold this bill over for possible inclusion. Representative Pearson, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'm going to have to account for that.
Okay.
House file 2939. Representative Papke, Scott County. Welcome to the committee. We will consider this bill that's before us and hear it and hold it over for possible inclusion. Representative Papke.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. Representative Tackby from Shakopee. Today we have three different bills into the Capital Investment Committee that we're seeing this summer. They've all three gone through the MMB process, and we're really proud to bring them forward as three projects that the county and the city have been working on for a really long time. That we'd like state bonding assistance in getting them completed. And the first of the three projects we're going to talk about today is a major connection from Carver County to from the land of Greg Bowe, Representative Greg Bowe, to Scott County. And so it's in an amazing area along the Minnesota River called the Louisville Swamp. And it is the entire Minnesota River and the Southern Metro has incredible park area, incredible natural areas. And this would add access between Carver County and Scott County and make major regional trail connections. And this is a 2.12 miles of paved trail. It has four bridges. It would cross the Minnesota River in an area where a former rail bed was. And so we are really excited. I have today with me a Scott County Commissioner to discuss the regional statewide impact of the project and why this is important. Madam Chair.
Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Barb Weckman-Brecke. I'm a Scott County Commissioner. Excited to be here today to talk about the Merriam Junction Trail. I grew up in this area, and Madam Chair, I can let you know there are a lot of eagles and eagles' nests in this area. And I think those eagles would like to see some development down there. This trail is truly a regional trail. If I were sitting in your chair today, I'd be wondering why are we being asked to support this 2.12-mile trail? That sounds pretty local. It's not. This is a major connection between Scott and Carver counties and into the whole region. You're familiar with our area. You know we have that wonderful natural resource, the Minnesota River there, but that wonderful natural resource makes traveling and crossing very difficult. So that's why we're here. Both Scott and Carver County have already made significant investments on either side of the river. And this trail, this 2.12 miles, really would open up a bounty of public lands to better and more accessible use by citizens. We have the state's Minnesota Valley Trail there, the Minnesota Valley Recreation Center, and several units of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife land of Louisville Swamp and the Rapids Lake unit. I think number two is you look at the price tag here. We're asking for $9 million with a county match of a little over $5 million. It's because of those bridges. You all know bridges are expensive. We have one large rail bridge that collapsed back in, 2007. I remember that. I live very near to this area. And then three other bridges that need retrofitting. So this is the kind of project that's hard to do with local, just the local dollars. And then finally, we're ready to roll. I think that's the number three thing that I really want to highlight. Scott County has already invested in the trail over 169 as part of our recent project there. We have all of the right-of-way secured. Preliminary engineering plans are done. So I think those are the three things I'd like to highlight. You do have a map here showing how this portion of the trail connects with the regional system in Scott and Carver and even Hennepin counties. And on the other side of the map shows the specifics of that 2.12 miles. Any questions?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Tabke. Often when we do trails, sometime in the process, the question comes up whether they should be paved or not paved, particularly it seems when we're in the Minnesota River Valley. And just wondering what those conversations have been held, if we do this, are we going to get some drama at some point about whether they should be paved or not paved?
Representative
Papke. Madam Chair and Representative Hansen, I don't believe there will be any drama come up with this. We have a significant portion of paved trail through Shakopee that this doesn't connect directly into the paved trail, but we have a significant portion along the Highway 101 and along the Minnesota River that goes from Shakopee and across the Bloomington Ferry Bridge into Bloomington and then up into the Fort Snelling area, and this goes all the way down to St. Peter and Mankato going the other direction. So this makes a major trail connection and connects as well. The Scott County has already finished. If you look on this side of the map, there's already a section that has been finished that was already done during a current road project that Scott County is in the middle of currently. And so this would connect a paved section here to the paved sections that are in downtown Carver. And Madam Chair, as well, we also have an amendment that I need to get for the bill.
Amendment 39A1.
Move the amendment.
Representative Considine moves the adoption of the amendment, and what does it do, Representative Papke?
Madam Chair, the amendment fixes a drafting error that we had for the county match for the matching for this project. It has the draft has $36 million as the match, and it should only be $5.838 million, and so that fixes a technical error there, which is a pretty big technical error.
Pretty big.
Yeah.
So you want that to be $5,838,000.
Yes.
Okay. Any other amendments?
Not for me.
All in favor of adoption of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a point of clarification, you said you already have approximately $5 million committed from the cities?
Madam Chair, oh, I'm sorry.
Commissioner.
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, from the county. The county match would be that 5.8.38 million.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? If not, we will go on.
Thank you very much,
Thank you very much. Thank you. The amendment or the bill as bills as amended will be held over for bill for possible inclusion. House File 2940. Representative Papke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second project that we have to bring before you today is from the City of Shakopee. The City of Shakopee, to our recollection, has never received or requested any bonding money in the past. And this project is very much an environmental project and an infrastructure project that we are working on throughout downtown Shakopee. And the Minnesota River is moving, as rivers have a tendency to do. The Minnesota River is moving, and it has, with the recent over the last decade, we've had a significant increase in the number of flooding events in the Minnesota River through downtown Shakopee, and that has created major issues with our infrastructure. And so the river bank has encroached upon the downtown area, and we need to work on the stabilization of the riverbank. And at the same time, we are working on with many partners on building a coalition to create a cultural corridor. So this has a significant history in Minnesota history with the Shakopee, Mattawakoneta, Sioux community and the Dakota community. And so we have a letter of support in the packet from the Shakopee, Mattawakoneta, Sioux community for this project in creating a cultural corridor that reflects the history of the area, because it has significant history. And Madam Chair, I have Mr. Michael Kursky from the City of Shakopee here to discuss quickly the infrastructure impacts that the river has moved over 50 feet over the course of the last 100 years and encroaching upon our historic downtown.
Director Kursky.
Madam Chair and Representatives, so the river is inundating the area on a regular basis now. It used to be every few years. Now it's every year. And our main sewer line that we inherited from the Met Council runs through this area. We project that we'll lose another 50 feet on each side of the riverbank by 2060. That will impact all of that infrastructure. It's bad enough right now. The state trail that runs through this area actually collapsed into the river, and we had to move it. So the river is encroaching quickly. That's 100,000 cubic yards of dirt that's going downriver into the Savage area. That's 6,000 truckloads, to put it in perspective. So it's a lot of dirt. The plan is to stabilize that riverbank. And then, as Representative Tapke said, work with our partners in actually relocating part of that state trail, and then working to preserve a lot of the cultural antiquities that are in that area that right now are going into the river.
So you're asking for what appropriation?
Madam Chair, the request specifically is for $11,753,000 for riverbank stabilization and the creation of the cultural corridor in that is working in conjunction. The local matches on these are between working with the city, the county, as well as the Shakopee, Mattawakoneta, Sioux community, Three Rivers Park District, and a variety of other local partners in getting this done.
How much of the trail would be relocated?
Madam Chair and Representatives, so the section that runs through Huber Park and then along some of the Shakopee, Minnetowocan Sioux area would have to be relocated, because right now it's underwater for a good part of the year. And so that does not allow either bike or pedestrian access through that area. Mm-hmm. So that we locate it up to higher ground.
Mr. Kursky, is that feet or is that miles?
Chair and Representatives, it would be miles.
Like how many?
There's approximately 3 miles of trail between Huber Park and the landing, so probably about 20 to 30% of that would have to come out of the current floodplain. So
1 mile?
Probably, yes, Madam Chair, about a mile. And Madam Chair and Representatives, the last piece, all of this property along the river is either owned and controlled by either DNR, the city, or the Shakopee Minnetowoc and Sioux. The city did acquire outside of this project the last 14 acres on the riverfront at the end of last year that were privately held. So now it's all controlled by public entities or the tribe.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Tabke, do you know, have there been in consultation with DNR about this at all, or is there any flood mitigation dollars that can be used?
I will let Mr. Kursky answer that, if that's
Mr.
all right.
Mr. Kursky.
We have not had the flood mitigation discussion with the DNR, but for years this area has been in it. They have participated using some federal money. We lost the pedestrian bridge that's between the Memorial Park and the DNR trail, and we've been working for I think 6 or 7 years to get that replaced, and participating with the DNR, the Shakopee Minnetowoc and Sioux community, the county and the city have raised funds to replace that bridge, but it's been a long and somewhat painful process. So we would like to really get this bank stabilized. For those of you that took the tour, it's no longer a bank, it's more of a cliff, and it's only going to get worse as we have these constant flooding events.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I don't know if this is for Representative Tapke or you, Mr. Persky. So you're going to be doing some stuff to the river at this point and trying to sort of, what I say, circumvent what is a natural process, because that's what happens. And I'm curious, in the design of the project, has there been much extensive study on the impact sort of downriver, as far as what it's going to do to water flows or other types of things? Are there other areas of erosion that may be, you know, increased or exacerbated as a result of this? I'm just curious to what extent this study has gone. I'm sure it wasn't something that was looked in isolation, but I'm curious about some of the extent of the initial study.
Madam Chair and Representatives, The goal is not to make matters worse downstream. I think one of the issues is over the past 100 years, the river has eroded over 100 feet. And as I said, it used to be back in the 1850s, it was a pretty natural, gentle slope down to the river. And as I said, now it's more of a cliff. Our consultants have projected putting that gentle slope back and removing a lot of the invasive species and large trees that have grown up that have created a lot of the flooding events, and actually allowing the water to come up into the area much more naturally and creating kind of a natural floodplain that doesn't exist today, so it would not be eroding the bank. So it would actually allow kind of a larger area to flood. And they've built into the design some areas that would be able to kind of more purify, and when the water came up into them, it wouldn't have as much damage as we're experiencing today. So I think we will resolve those engineering problems and design problems and make it, I think, much better situation than we have today.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. We'll hold this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much.
House File 2941.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. This is the final project we're here to discuss today, so thank you very much for allowing us to put these together here. And
you've got a minute.
I will make it very quickly. So you see a theme with our projects of access to the Minnesota River and making sure that we are recognizing that history. And so this project, when 169 was built through Shakopee in the 90s, it was not built with pedestrian connections throughout the community. And so we have a 3.5-plus mile section of highway that is not accessible from the south side of town across the highway to the industrial park as well as to the river area. And so we are asking for a project that was both included in the governor's bonding bill to create a pedestrian bridge over 169 to bridge that gap of 3.25 miles. And I have Risa Husted, who is here today, and she is an avid biker and she works in the biking industry, and she uses this area all the time and wants to talk about the regional impact, if you will, Madam Chair, of this pedestrian bridge.
Ms. Husted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commute by bike year-round, and I just want to emphasize how important this kind of connection will be for the area. Not only is it going to be the only way to get across 169 for several miles if you are on a bike, but it also represents the only pedestrian crossing of 169 east of the city center. I think that it's a no-brainer to connect the future regional destination that's being built north of 169 to the residential areas south of 169, but it will also help connect the DNR trails and the crossing over the Minnesota River to the city of Shakopee and everything south.
Thank you very much. Representative, we will hold this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members.
That concludes Representative Tabke's agenda. Representative Cantrell. Ms. Freeze.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 3138 would appropriate $5.269 million from bond proceeds in the State Transportation Fund to fund critical road improvements on Highway 13 and Savage. There are really two major highways in that area, and that is Highway 42 and Highway 13. Both are at or over capacity. I will say, if you were to type in Highway 13 and Savage accidents in the search bar on Google and click on the news tab, you would see accidents every couple of months. It's really independent of season, and that's because this road has such high congestion. It's I think the most traveled artery in the state, but we have several major highways and freeways that flow into Highway 13, and it is also a major corridor through which the businesses in our community conduct commerce. So I'm going to turn my presentation over to Lisa Fries, and I ask please for your support for these really important road improvements.
Thank you. Ms. Fries.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Fries. I'm the Transportation Services Director at Scott County, and this project is something that we've been working on for quite some time. Trunk Highway 13 itself is a major connection between I-35W and 169, and it's really the main east-west corridor in the northern part of the county to provide access. So it's an important commuter route, but most importantly, it serves statewide as a freight area because of the ports of Savage. Mm-hmm. The ports of Savage is a major facility that takes in over 3.3 million tons of agricultural commodities each year from pretty much all parts of southern Minnesota. So it's very critical for our agricultural industry. It also is a key area for pricing of agricultural commodities because both the rail lines and the river ports come together here. So it's a multimodal area for commodity transportation. So it's important for pricing. Over the years, and I've worked on this corridor for 20 plus years now, congestion has picked up because of the rapid growth in Dakota and Scott County. And it's becoming increasingly more difficult for the truckers who come in, and a lot of those folks are farmers who come in and use the ports each year. It's not uncommon to see 10, 12 trucks at this particular intersection backed up, waiting to make a left-hand turn. I've even witnessed myself truckers waiting and then turning it into a dual left turn, mm-hmm. and two trucks going at once across the roadway. So there's some very scary situations going on. So our project that we're proposing to do, and we have some funding aligned, but we have a gap yet, is an interchange at Dakota Avenue. And that interchange will serve some major terminals there. It'll serve one of the Cargill terminals, Superior Minerals, Cenex Harvest States, Riverland, and a number of other key businesses like Fabcon Industries. And if you're familiar with Fabcon, they're the supplier of pretty much all of the major commercial industrial building tip-up panels throughout the region. So there's some really important businesses here that need to get freight in and out. So what we're asking for is that we have a gap in the project. It's about a $35 million project, and we have about a $5.3 million gap. And we're asking for that for the city of Savage because there's a lot of local road improvements that need to go into this really truly regional and statewide project, and they will have a tough time coming up with that amount of cash to match in the project. We also have some Scott County transportation sales tax money on this project, and we've worked hard with the city to secure both some state and federal freight money and regional money through the Met Council. So we appreciate your consideration. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Seeing none, this bill will be held over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Thank you very much. Thank you, committee members. This meeting is adjourned.